drunkard's haze, just lit by this flow. We got the band in the basement, Mom. The fire on that mountain steel. Don't need your plow or that old mill cow. We're working on this hill. Hang up the wagon. Stumbling tear, high on a bathtub gin. Shows me her kids and tells me how she is, how she was back when. So back when I worked for the county clerk, when I wore those finer clothes. Now them days are gone.
Pine Grove by Ian Noe on the Hippies and Cowboys podcast. You are now listening to episode number 132 of the show, and I would like to thank you for tuning in. My name is Garrett McKee, and I am actually your one and only host on the show today. And my guest on the show today is Eastern Kentucky singer-songwriter Ian Noe. Ian has a brand new album set to come out on March 25th, 2022, River Fools and Mountain Saints. Easily my favorite release of the year so far, and an absolutely outstanding follow-up to his 2019 debut, Between the Country. I've been a huge fan of Ian Noe for years since I've heard that first record, and it was really just super exciting to get a chance to sit down and have a conversation with him about this new album, and about, him in general. Give a little bit of a background into who he is before we ever even heard that debut album in 2019. This was actually Ian's first podcast that he has ever done, he told me, so it's kind of interesting. The podcast, as always, is brought to you by Workman's Relief CBD. Let me tell you guys, I fucked up my back a little bit at work last week, some muscles, and could barely sit down on my couch. And when I got home, I rubbed some of Workman's Relief elbow grease on my back, which is CBD-infused, like icy hot, basically, and within like 20 minutes I was fine. Like, no bullshit. I don't mean to. I'm not making stuff up for advertisements here. Like, shit really works. So, you should go scoop some up. And while you do it, use our promo code HACCBD for 15% off your entire order at checkout. For all things merch related and everything else related to the podcast, you can go to thehippiesandcowboys.com and check out everything we have available for sale there and everything else that we are slinging out there for content. We're getting into the end of winter here and we're feeling motivated to crank out some more content for you guys. So thanks so much for your support. As always, if you would like bonus content, opportunities to ask questions to our guests, and a bonus podcast that we only do on Patreon, you can sign up at patreon.com/hippiesandcowboys for as little as $1 a month. Whatever you want to pledge per month, you decide. And no matter what you decide to pledge, we appreciate your support. Without further ado, everyone, let's dive right in here. I hope y'all enjoy my conversation with Ian No, and I can't wait for you all to hear River Fools and Mountain Saints on March 25th. Enjoy the show. All right, everybody. Ian No, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for doing this, man.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to this one for a while. I found your first record, Between the Country, probably like, you know, 4 to 6 months after it came out, honestly. And it just blew my mind. I don't know how I hadn't found it yet. It just kind of found it through some circles on Twitter. And I got to say, like, that quickly, you know, 2019 was a pretty, there's a lot of great releases that year. And, you know, I kind of guess I thought I had everything all figured out in my head as far as my favorite albums from that year, and yours quickly grew to the top of that list not long after I heard it for the first time. So, you know, I've been, ever since we started doing this podcast, I've been wanting to chat with you and, you know, pick your brain a little bit. And so, yeah, I just thought I'd let you know that I absolutely love that first album, and I was really excited to hear that we're getting something new from you here. March 25th, not too far out now. And
23 days away.
23 days. The countdown is on. Man. So I guess, you know, I kind of wanted to start today with a bit of a background maybe into you a little further before we get into the new album so much. I'm sure it'll lead into that, I'm sure. But, you know, because I, outside of stuff that, you know, kind of came out around that album and now around this album, and save for the few, you know, there's some YouTube, short little YouTube videos, kind of interview style type things. And I listened to your kind of podcast and rundown through Between the Country with Dave Cobb on his Apple Music radio show. But outside of that, man, there's not a ton of, like, you know, podcasts or interview stuff. Like, is this like kind of the first one you've done?
This is the first one that I've done.
This is the first one you've done. Wow. Okay. No pressure. No pressure. Yeah. But it's cool, man. And I just thought we could get into a little bit about, you know, who you are too. I understand that you kind of picked up the guitar and really got into music at a pretty young age. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. I've had a guitar in my hand as long as I could barely hold one. 5 or 6 years old is when I really started trying to figure a guitar out, even though if I couldn't physically chord one. But, my dad's a great singer-songwriter in his own right. My grandfather was a great player and singer, so I just grew up around all that. So it was just ingrained in me. I didn't really have a choice.
Yeah, it seems to be the case with a lot of artists from Eastern Kentucky. It's kind of a family. It kind of just passed down from generations, it seems like, if you grow up with music in the house.
A lot of music there. A lot of music.
Yeah. And I remember you mentioning, like, your dad several times in that Dave Cobb podcast, you talked about, you know, seeing John Prine with him. He, you know, I figured that that must have been a big part of your introduction to music. And I was curious, was I'm going to call John Prine kind of folk music here. Was folk music kind of your first introduction to music, or did that, you know, kind of classic like country bluegrass type of thing hit you first and then you kind of went from there?
The first thing that I ever wanted to do was to play like Chuck Berry. Chuck Berry was my first artist that I ever really latched onto and really changed my life to where I was obsessed with learning how to do that.
Cool.
And then it became very apparent pretty quick that Chuck Berry is Chuck Berry and that's it. But, you know, it was Chuck Berry there for a long, long time. It was Johnny B. Goode was the first song I ever learned, you know. So it went from that to pretty quickly Bob Dylan, you know. It went right into the Bob Dylan thing. Learning all of those early acoustic albums, you know, just such a wealth of material that you'd spend forever learning it. But it went from Chuck to Bob to Neil Young. And those were my three for a long time before I ever got into Prime.
About how old were you when you got into Bob Dylan?
The first record that I ever bought of Bob Dylan's was Bring It All Back Home. I threw it in my grandparents' shopping cart in a Kmart. They didn't see it until we got into the checkout line, but they still bought it for me. So I think I was around maybe 11,
wow.
10 or 11, something like that.
That's this.
He'd recorded a PBS special in the 90s, and it was Bob Dylan's 30th anniversary. So we had that on VHS, and that's probably really the first thing as far as songwriting. I mean, I obsessed over that concert. But, yeah.
That's cool because it's, you know, I mean, Bob Dylan, that alone, it's kind of like folk music. I was just kind of thinking about this earlier, kind of thinking about what I wanted to chat with you about. And, you know, folk music, like for me, I mean, I grew up on country music or whatever was on country radio or, you know, whatever my dad was going to show me at the time, Willie Nelson, Robert Earl Keen, whatever it may be. But in particular, and even some of that music, you know, I don't know if I connected with it at that, on that level until I was more mature and in my adult years. So it's really interesting that you say, you know, 11, 12 years old or whatever it was that, you know, Bob Dylan fascinated you like that, because it feels like something that you kind of have to, like, it's a mature genre of music, and it's even just in subject matter alone, let alone sure. Then getting into the way Bob Dylan writes and all of the layers to that.
Absolutely. I believe that I hear Bob Dylan different now, probably, than what I did at 10 or 11 years old.
Sure.
Somebody said one time, I can't remember who it was, but the thing with Bob Dylan is you don't even, it's the melodies and the way he just did it. You can listen and enjoy without dissecting every word of My Back Pages or A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall. You can sit there and take music in and enjoy it without trying to rack your brain about what it's about. So I was just listening to the music and just the literal sound of what it sounded like, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not even sure if I understood the cultural impact of Bob Dylan at 10 or 11, probably definitely, absolutely not. I just knew that I loved everything that I heard. And it mainly come from my dad playing all these songs. My dad would play all of these songs. So that's how I got introduced to all of it.
Yeah.
He would play something, Tangled Up in Blue. What's that? What's a Bob Dylan song?
Yeah. Very cool, man. It and was that about the time you think like about was that about the time that you kind of got interested in trying to write your own material, or you were still just trying to figure out the fretboard?
It took me a long time before I sat down and tried to put something on a page. my aunt would stay on me. She would always, I was content with just learning all of these singer-songwriters' discographies and being able to play it at my kitchen table, you know, and being able to blow the harmonica along to Heart of Gold. Or I was extremely satisfied with doing that up until about 15, 16 years. When I was 15, 16, my aunt, she would ask me all the time, have you started writing yet? And she asked me this one specific time, and I just, that's when I started writing, when I was about 15 or 16. So
was that kind of something you started to gravitate towards even with your writing, or did you, you know, did you start to, like, how did that change your perception of these heroes that you're talking about when it comes to, you know, Bob Dylan, Chuck Berry, John Prine? Like, did you had to go back and re-listen probably all over again and try to dissect that stuff, like you said?
Talking about tall shoulders there.
Yeah.
Talking about Mount Rushmore discographies. So starting out, I thought you had to be, you know, you listen to a song like It's All Right, Mom, I'm Only Bleeding, and you're obsessed with a song like that forever. And so then you start trying to write all this long prose and, you know, making crap, no direction to what I was writing. All I knew is I was trying to write.
Yeah.
But I focused on the melodies more so than I did the actual lyrics. The melody is what I tried to learn how to do, to come up with a great melody, because, you know, that's what sticks.
Yeah.
And so I guess it was probably around 17, 18 till I can really, you know, I was writing songs that I was actually happy with.
Right.
You know, that felt like my own thing, you know.
And so I got a bit of a history of that first record through that interview with Dave Cobb. And I encourage anybody listening to this, if you have Apple Music and access to that, like Apple Music Radio, I guess, to go and look up that episode and listen to it, because it's a great breakdown of every track on that record. So I got a bit of a history of, you know, kind of the timeline of some of those songs and, you know, how long it took you to write them. But I guess I'm curious. You'd said that you'd had just a line for years and years, and then it finally clicked and you'd written these songs. But so if you started around, you know, 17, 18 years old, about how long, you know, what was the oldest track on that first record, I guess, is where I want to start with this.
The oldest track on that first record, let me think here. I would say that Barbara's Song is the oldest one on that record. I wrote that when I was still in high school. And 17 or 18, my senior year, I think, is when I wrote that. And it originally was a bouncy. I mean, I did quite a bit of editing into that song before it finally made it onto Between the Country. But I carried that one for a long time. It was more of a bouncy, really folky song. I wanted to write a song about a train crash, and I remember that I wasn't satisfied with just making up a song about a train crash. I had to have some evidence of a train crash in Kentucky before I could reason it, justify writing a song. I don't know. Right. Back then, I had a writing poet friend by the name of Sam Cole, and she's great. She still does writing. But I was like, can I just make this up? You know, she's like, you can make up anything you want. Anyways, I had found a train crash that had happened in 1904 in Kentucky. So that justified it enough for me to finish it. But yeah, it was Barbara's Song. That's for sure the oldest one on there. The rest of them are new, but that one, yeah.
Yeah. What was it like, I guess, this time around? Because, you know, I'd made note of the fact that you had said that some of these you'd been working on for several years to make it to that first record in 2019. Now here we are, 2022. What was it like, I guess, having a more condensed, and I know some of the songs on this album too are old, like POW Blues, for example. I know you've been playing for years live and that kind of thing, but, you know, what was it like, I guess, condensing that period to down to, you know, 3 years or whatever it may have been between records? And, you know, what was different this time around about the writing process, I guess?
Just more time, to be honest.
Yeah, and off the road, of course.
It's more time just to put into it. But if I'd have had my druthers about it, you know, I would have finished it, it would have been out a year ago, right? You know, but since we've all been playing it by ear for the last little bit, it was just more time. The writing process didn't change. When we started working on this album, it was just a few months pre-pandemic. But the whole thing is pretty, it's a pandemic record for sure. I had a whole other album that we recorded that I shelved right at the beginning, before we did River Fools and Mountain Saints. It just wasn't working for me. So I scrapped that and, got the title River Fools and Mountain Saints before I had anything else, you know,
really?
Where I was going. But once I had that title, I knew I had a vision. So that stuck for me.
And it was definitely inspired by the, you know, that isolation, that pandemic, you think? There's a lot of hints to that, like a lot of hints and a lot of themes within the record that kind of are, you know.
Yeah, the first word on the album is Stranded.
Yeah, Stranded Inside, man. Yeah.
And that whole song, I mean, that's the last song we finished, was Pine Grove, but that whole song is just about the pandemic. It's just about being inside. You can't go anywhere, so we're just going to play music the whole time. And that's literally all that's about. So, the one I shelved was a little bit, it was straight 100% pandemic, you know, subject matter, but
really
I wanted to have a good follow-up to Between the Country and subject matter and everything. So, just the brighter side of the coin to Between the Country.
Yeah.
Just once I realized what was going on, but you know, we did Between the Country, recorded it and mixed it in 6 days.
Wow.
So, yeah, you know, that's how quick that was. And
that's Dave Cobb for you. He's kind of notorious for cutting records fast, in and out, and that's
we got it done. But and here this time I had all this time in my hands, and I enjoyed having more time to put more to flesh more things out. So it was just more time to flesh out ideas.
Yeah, very cool. And this record definitely has, I definitely agree with the fact that there's definitely a lot more brighter songs on this album, a lot more. It was in ways not what I was expecting after for a follow-up, but it's still a continuation, but it's you definitely took it another step further with the instrumentals and everything. And you co-produce too, is that right?
Yeah.
And
That's definitely my first experience really of doing anything like that. I mean, in the past I'd do one-offs here and there where I would produce this or that, but this is the first legit, you know, credit that I've ever had. And I enjoyed it.
Have you always, you know, thought of that, you know, since the time you started writing songs, have you always thought that at some point you would want to produce your own albums or, you know, co-produce?
Absolutely.
You know,
being around somebody like Dave Cobb, though, you pick up a lot, because I'm not even sure if I really understood what entailed being a producer was before I even stepped into a studio. What was a producer? What is that exactly?
Yeah.
So I'm still learning that whole process. And it's a different type of ear that they have for it that you may not have. But the freedom to work with somebody like Andrea Toksik at the bomb shelter, he let me try whatever I wanted to try.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big plus. There wasn't a whole lot of, we also didn't beat tracks to death. We didn't do 10 takes. We would do three takes if it didn't work. And that's the way I like to work. If it's not happening, let's move on. So that's kind of how that was kind of the process.
Great stuff. Well, everybody heard Pine Grove off the top of the show there. I don't know if you have anything more that you want to add as far as, you know, explanation or inspiration behind that song. You kind of already touched on that, but we should probably roll into the next one here. We're going to play River Fool next, and I don't know if you want to introduce that one for everybody. We'll roll right into that, and I'll let you take it away.
This is Ian Nolan. You're going to listen to River Fool. That song is right now, as it stands, probably my favorite song that I've ever wrote. it's definitely for sure my favorite song on this record. I got absolutely everything that I wanted to out of this song because it turned out the way that I heard it in my head. And that song is very, very special to me. When I was working in the oil fields in Eastern Kentucky, we used to watch this guy, had his own YouTube channel. His name is O.H. Napier. And there was this one specific video of him. And he was in the middle of the South Fork River in Kentucky, sitting in a chair. He had a guitar, and he was just playing just stream of consciousness, just a song just off the top of his head. It's entertained me for years. I've watched this video for years. And so he stuck in my head, and I always knew I wanted to write a song about him, but I didn't know what he was. And then Riverfall stuck out. It's like, well, that makes sense. So I heard this bluegrass style tune, and that's just how it came out. It worked. I was going for one of those songs that sounds like it's always been there. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like you hear a song and you go, man, what's that? Just sounds like it's from some other place. And if I do say so myself, that's what I was going for, and I think that's what I achieved with it.
South Fork, Kentucky, there lives a man everybody knows. Spends his days in a muddy haze, tangled in the cattail poles, working on an ancient bottle in the shade of a yellow pine. Just a river full on good old mountain wine. Takes a 4-10 out for hunting. Sometimes if he paddles far, might even bring his old six-string, hammer that CCR. And if it don't feel right for picking, he might dance in the kudzu vine. Just a river full of good old mountain wine. Just a river full of good old mountain wine. Falling like a mountain lion. And you can hear them all the way in Jackson, past the Wolf Creek line. Just a river full on good old mountain wine. Dreaming all by his lonesome, content with his place and time. Just a river full on good old mountain wine. Just a river full on good old mountain wine. Shooting at the moon and squalling like a mountain lion. And you can hear them all past the Wolf Creek line. Just a river full of good old mountain wine. Just a river full of good old mountain wine.
All right, so that was River Fool. Ian, I just say that, you know, listening to your first, I kind of talked about how I discovered your first record there right off the top. And then, you know, even with this one, I find myself kind of going back to this thought. And, you know, there's a lot of Appalachian artists who, before I had visited Kentucky or ever even been there, I found that there was, you know, a select few who are particularly really, really good at making it. It kind of would, they would kind of make me miss a place that I'd never been to at the time. And then now after being there, it's kind of, you know, I just, you have a real knack for taking simple things, simple ideas, simple characters, you know, writing a story and making the listener, at least this is my experience with it, making me miss a place that I'm not from or feel nostalgia for a place that I've never even really spent any significant amount of time in outside of a few weeks here and there. Yeah. I guess this is all kind of to say that, you know, I assume how important to you is it in your writing that you depict Appalachia and these characters both accurately, but still keeping them, I guess, fictional almost enough that they're very entertaining, I guess. Because you had kind of mentioned, you know, the train thing. It's like, well, you needed that little sliver of truth to like run with it.
Yeah. Well, it's
if that even makes sense, what I said.
I wouldn't say it's so much of a. It honestly is a write about what you know type thing.
Yeah.
And I found that. I mean, I know how to write songs like that. And the first thing that I'm after is it has to be able to move me. It has to be able to. I have to be able to separate my own self from it. And listen to it. And it moved me in a way that maybe another artist would move me. My own stuff has to move me the same way that a John Prine song or something else. That's my litmus test. That's my bar. So, I'm almost 32 years old. I'm born and raised in Eastern Kentucky. All these songs are just my life, basically, you know, for the most part. And the characters do have dignity. You know, the only time that I ever really went off the rails with anything would probably be a song like Meth Head, but I had to write that way because it's such an angry drug to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very important for me to have sunshine on Appalachia. So that's just what I know, and that's just what I do.
Do you have a hard time at all coming up with unrelated, you know, subject matter to write songs with?
No.
You know, do you ever think, could you ever see yourself maybe one day, like even taking on some kind of like a concept record where it's not, it's not related to Appalachia at all? Or do you think that'll always kind of,
the whole record
kind of come through?
The whole record that I had recorded that was supposed to come out after Between the Country was an entirely worldview record that had nothing to do with Appalachia.
Okay.
And I still have it shelved and I'm still working on it. But I like for things to be in order. So I like for them to be pieces, and I like for stuff to fit right down to each title, like Between the Country, River Fools and Mountain Saints sounds right to me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It looks right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But no, I don't, I'm just at this moment in my life, I'm enjoying the work that I'm doing and what I'm writing about.
Yeah.
It's bringing me the happiness that I want from it. So
right.
That Appalachian style stuff, that's heaven to me.
Yeah. I remember you talking with Dave. Sorry, I keep going back to that conversation so much, but there was just so much stuff that intrigued me from that conversation that I wanted to kind of build on with this.
Yeah.
But you had talked about some of the song inspirations, obviously, as you guys were breaking down that album. And, you know, I remember you saying there was a TV series that had inspired one. I remember you saying Barber's Song was kind of inspired by The Bottomless Lake by John Prine. Is there any off the top of your head from this album, other than obviously Riverfall? You told us that cool story about the fellow on YouTube there. Is there any interesting, you know, kind of out there inspirations on this one in particular that you'd like to kind of share?
Well, you know, I told you about Riverfool.
Yeah.
The song Mountain Saint. That character was just as interesting as O.H. Naker about Riverfool. And he's passed away now, sadly. And the person that I wrote Mountain Saint about was just as much as a legend. And they passed away now, too. But she was I bought my first pot from this lady.
Okay.
She was a pot dealer in my hometown, and I did not know her personally, nor had I ever even met her. But a small town is a small town, and everybody knows everybody. And she did her own thing. She lived in a holler, you know. She had a trailer on the hill, and it was my junior year, something like that. All my buddies were sitting at the lunch table talking about this pot, and I got a buddy of mine to meet me up above a church parking lot on a Sunday morning at 8:30 in the woods. And he gave me four joints, and I gave him $20, and it all came from her. I mean, it was secondhand, but like, she was the one who had it.
Yeah.
And I've never forgotten that moment or hearing about her or seeing her at the store. She was definitely a character. But that's completely about her, you know. It's just about one of those small town characters.
Yeah. That's cool, man. I can totally relate to that, being from a really small town. Where I grew up, there's about 1,000 people that live there on a good day. So it's like there's definitely those figures in your town that they're almost mythical creatures.
But you said something very interesting about listening to music that made you nostalgic for a place that you've never been.
Yeah.
I understand exactly what you mean. Like listening to Neil Young sing Helpless my whole life. North Ontario, I'd never been to North Ontario, but sure. it sounded great. There is a town in North Ontario. Dream Comfort Memories is there. I mean, yeah, so I get that.
Yeah.
And that's what you're shooting for. That's it. It's that type of feeling right there.
And it's the feeling you're describing with moving yourself the way that you want to be moved from another songwriter.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to be in tune with your gut. Your gut has got to be, you have to know. You know what I mean? I get the same feeling listening to Brown Eyed Girl as I do listening to like a Personality Crisis by the New York Dolls.
Okay.
You ever heard of them?
No. That's New York Dolls.
Check out the New York Dolls. Some say that they are the legit first punk rock band.
Okay.
It comes down to melody. If you know how to twist the melody, you can tell anybody anything. I mean, do you know what Neil Young is talking about in After the Gold Rush? I don't, but I don't care. He's got the melody and he's got to
play
it. Who carries it?
Yeah. Is it, and then how much of that, you say trust in your gut, like when you go off and come up with the title, River Fools and Mountain Saints, and you say, oh shit, that just feels right. How, you know, what are the next hours, days, and weeks like after you just have that kind of, was it kind of like a snap moment and then you just ran with it? Like what, how, you know, what would describe, I mean, for somebody who's never, you know, written an album before, let alone come up with something like that and ran with it, it just, what's that like? What's the time right after like for you?
Well, that was pretty great after I got that title because I was, like I said, it was complete instinct. And I always follow my gut. If it hits me and I know it's right, I don't question it. When I got that title, the title was the first thing that I had.
Yeah.
But it rolled off the tongue good enough and it looked good just written out.
Yeah.
Once I had that, you know, river full, so you got a river down here, mountain up here. Well, then just think about the geography of it. Well, I can take River Full and I can make that one side of an album. I can take the Mountain Saint side and do another side. So it just, the door kicked open for me to do whatever I wanted to with that, paint it however I wanted to. But I like to think of it like Bruce Springsteen, they used to talk about doing, where they would do like a foundation type thing where you want that first track on the album to be a barn burner. If you say, let's say you got 10 tracks, you want that fifth track to be a barn burner, that sixth one, that 10th one. So then you got a foundation that sits like that. It's just like a house. So I just, when I think about it, I think about how is the album itself going to come together. I'm not thinking about a CD or a shuffle. How's it going to be when I flip it over to side two? So once I, like I said, once I had that title, I was off and running with it.
That's so cool to hear you describe that.
Yeah.
Because I remember the first time I listened to it, and I think it's, sorry, I don't have the track list in front of me, but I think it's POW Blues, Burning Down the Prairie, Appalachia Haze. Uh-huh. Right. I remember that 3-song run and just being like, holy shit. Like I don't know what it was, just those 3 in a row for whatever reason. Through the very first time I listened to it, I was blown away by, you know, just getting punched in the mouth 3 times in a row. Those barn burners. So it's cool to hear you describe it like that. And, you know, we had a conversation here a couple weeks ago with Eric Bolander, and we kind of, that was our, I believe it'll be our last episode when this one released, but we had talked about kind of how the casual music fan may not pick up on those types of things, and they may not pick up on you building that house at first, but the ones who, you know, the ones who are listening to this podcast, the ones who are deeply, you know, deeply crazy about music and in the ins and outs of making an album and setting up a track list and that type of thing, are, they're definitely going to notice that and appreciate it. Even if it's maybe not at first, but through the fifth to sixth listen, they're either going to pick up that on that themselves, or they're going to hear you talk about it here and they're going to listen for it now.
It's always going to be about the album for me, because it's the format to where you can really sit down and try to. I mean, we live in such a time now where everything is so quick and everything gets digested so quickly, but it will always be about, you know, the album and how it plays all the way through.
Yes.
You got 1 second?
Yeah, go ahead.
These right here, there's no difference. As far as the way these albums move me, there is no difference in them. I mean, they're, of course, musically, sonically, they're all different, but
yeah,
these two albums right here are perfect from top to bottom.
Tell everybody listening audio what you got there.
This is Neil Young's After the Gold Rush and Vampire Weekend's Modern Vampires in the City. And Vampire Weekend is very much an album band. So that's what I gravitate towards. That's what I try to do. That's who I listen to. It's bands, artists that still love the album.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of an album. The idea of sitting down and digesting a whole album.
Because, I mean, there's artists out there that can write a song. There's artists out there that can compose a song. But it's the ones that take that, at least in my opinion, that take that extra step to make every little detail about that, building that house, that extra step further. That's such a big, big piece of, like, the art. And it's like you said, it's what makes the album.
And it's a rewarding process, too. I mean, if that's what you like, I mean, it's very rewarding to me to try. And even if it doesn't work out, even if everybody else doesn't hear it the way I heard it, it helps me finish what I have to finish to have that mindset, you know?
Yeah. Well, and it's important that you're proud of it, regardless of how it's received, you know?
Absolutely. That's first and foremost for me, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd say most people would probably say that too about their own stuff, you know. Trying to satisfy yourself, you know.
Definitely. Let's roll into some. I'm going to ask you some rapid fire questions here. I did brief you on this one a little bit, but I'm going to ask you maybe some silly stuff. So let's start with Ian. Noah, what's your favorite gas station snack?
Gas station snack. It would have to probably be beef jerky.
Beef jerky, good choice.
It's a
go-to. Can't really go wrong with that.
No. A big giant bag of the old Trapper beef jerky.
Okay. All right. I think I know what your favorite John Prine song is, but what's your favorite John Prine song to play?
My favorite John Prine song to play? I mean, it's probably still Hello in There.
Okay. That's what I thought. I've heard you talk about that before.
But it's probably still Hello in There because, you know, it's such a beautiful piece of music. You know, it's fun to play. It's a song you can keep your fingers loosened up with, and, you know, because for sure it's that one.
Go to Hangover Cure.
Go to Hangover Cure?
Yes, sir.
It would either be some V8 or the 1,000 milligram. What is it? The vitamin C packs, the orange flavor.
Oh, yeah. Emergency.
Those. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if that, I've never tried that. That might work. Yeah. For me, it's like I need some caffeine, but like for some reason, an ice cold can of Coca-Cola.
Oh, yeah. Well, that
fixes me up a little bit.
As far as the quick fix for the headache and the I would go with a Goody powder.
Oh, yeah?
Have you ever had those?
I don't think so.
They're caffeine, and it's a headache powder that just knocks it out quick.
Oh, there you go. Yep. All right. Good to know. All right, I got one more for you. A record or movie, I'll give you the option, that you wish everyone in the world has experienced at least once.
Record or a movie? I'll give you a movie.
Okay, give me a movie.
Windy City Heat.
What's that, sorry?
Windy City Heat.
Oh, shit, man. Well, you're kicking my ass today because I've never seen that. I'm going to have to watch that.
You're going to enjoy that one.
All right. It's on the list.
Yeah.
All right. So that was way faster. Usually when Mike and I have to do rapid fires, it obviously takes longer because then we get off on a fucking tangent, you know. But
I can see how that would be fun, though. Also, it was fun just doing it with you, but him there, I could bouncing stuff around. Yeah. I'd like to do it with him as well.
Hey, we'll do it again. We should do it in person. We'll do it in person, yeah. with all three of us, and then it'll be better. Unfortunately, like I said, he couldn't make it today. But man, I've really enjoyed the conversation, man. Hey, I gotta ask you, where are you in the photo on the album cover?
On a River Falls of Mountain Saints?
Yeah, yeah.
That is in my grandfather's basement.
Oh, cool.
That basement had just flooded last year in March. And you see all those old bottles and all that stuff around. Yeah. He had a lot of stuff get destroyed in that basement. He passed away last year, but that's in his basement. That. Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Well, listen, man, I've really enjoyed this conversation. I hope everybody listened to this. I'm sure they've already dove into the few singles that we've got so far. But March 25th, 2022, you'll all be able to listen to the entirety of River Fools and Mountain Saints. Is there still? I know the gold vinyl is sold out, I believe, unless you're repressing those. But I'm sure if you want to plug anything you've got up for pre-sale right now, you can go ahead and do that. Just plug anything you've got coming up here right away. I know you're just announced the European tour. I know you've got some dates happening this summer. I don't expect you to rattle all that off, but at least direct everybody to where they can find the stuff.
First show the 24th of March, Indianapolis. You can find all my information on enno.com. Enno.com, it's all right there. And we have a whole brand new line of merch that I'm very proud of. I think we reordered the gold vinyl again, but I think it's sold out again. But all kinds of new stuff. It's all brand new. Enno.com.
Hell yeah. And
yeah.
So we're going to leave everybody with Burning Down the Prairie, one of my favorite tracks through the first listen to when I first listened to this album. Still maybe one of my favorites here. Again, thank you so much for doing the podcast, man. We'll catch up here hopefully this summer, maybe even, and we can talk about the album, and how it's been received so far. Maybe after you get back from Europe, Mike and I will get a chance to sit down with you or something, but we'll catch up again. And I really appreciate you taking the time to do this.
I've had a great time talking to you, man. It was a blast.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
The rapid fire was fun.
Good, good. That's the goal.
Yeah.
That's the goal. We got to keep it light. We got to dig into who Ian Know is through the information about what your favorite gas station snack is. It's very important that everybody knows.
Crucial.
But if you want to go ahead and leave everybody with a little introduction, tell us a little story behind Burning Down the Prairie, you can take it away, and thanks again.
Oh, thank you, Garrett. This is you're ready to hear Burning Down the Prairie. This is a song I wrote about reading about Native American culture growing up, and it's just about a tribe that was trying to figure out what was going on.
Burning down the prairie, got a handful of river cane. Just sitting up on this hillside, praying to God it doesn't rain. We've been healing from a winter that brought us more than sleet and snow. We've been healing from a winter that brought us more than sleet and snow. And someone out there somewhere's been cutting down the buffalo. Well, we followed bloody footprints for many miles along the creek. Yeah, we followed bloody footprints for many miles along the creek. Someone out there somewhere's been walking with two wicked feet. Daddy's on a rampage, late at night I hear him crying. Every night I hear him crying. He said someone out there somewhere's been stalking like a mountain lion. See them coming now, covered up and bone and hide. Yeah, I can see them coming now.